Sai's Glory, His Divine Story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Sai's Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m. Offering ourselves at Bhagwan's lotus feet, this is Karuna, along with audio engineer Yatharta, signing in from Prashanti Nilayam, the spiritual capital of the universe. Welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. The time right now, we are a little bit ahead of ourselves today, is 9:35. It's a beautiful Thursday morning, December the 20th, 2012. And here at Prashanti Nilayam, the countdown for the big day has already begun. In 5 days, the abode of Bhagwan Sri Satyasai Baba will celebrate Christmas in its own unique fashion. These days, everywhere you look around in the ashram, you can see loads of beautiful lights and holly and poinsettias and stars and angels. My personal favorite right now is the park behind the golden Ganesha holding that little umbrella. There along the trail, you can see Lord Jesus standing on the highest point. And a few days ago, I saw this beautiful arch of green and red and gold around the golden statue of Jesus. The sight is simply spellbinding. The decoration is beautiful and Jesus has the most compassionate expression on his face. As this famous song by Bryan Adams goes, there's really something very special about Christmas time, and in Prashanti Nilayam is extra special. The ashram atmosphere right now is charged with joy in anticipation of this holy day, and anyone who has been to Prashanti during Christmas will agree that we celebrate the real spiritual version of Christmas with prayers and carols and remembering the gospel of Jesus as he intended it. So while elsewhere this season is often associated with retail sales and gift exchanging and Christmas parties and so on, here in Prashanti, we are hosting the international community that has come down to reclaim the true Christmas spirit. Just yesterday, I was at the Western Canteen for lunch, and it was packed with devotees from every culture and country, and the happy carolers are busy practicing away at the conference hall besides the bookstore. We're also enjoying some really picture-perfect weather these days, with lows in the mid-teens and highs of barely 30 degrees Celsius. Speaking of highs, the excitement is at its highest because of the very special Christmas decorations being prepared for this year's celebrations. In Prashanti Nilayam, we're just used to waking up each morning, going to the Sai Kulwant Hall to find new decorations, new themes and brand new concerts, because life here is an eternal celebration. Because this happens to be, as you must remember, the most happening place on the face of earth. And this year, the devotees are abuzz with joy because the country in charge of the decorations is New Zealand, often referred to as New Sai Land by Bhagwan Baba. Today on Morning Glory, we will feature three New Zealanders. One through a live interview in the studio with Lynn Kriegler, an artist. And a couple of days ago, I recorded an interview with two members of the New Zealand team about the theme of this year's Christmas decoration in the ashram. We'll air that conversation with Mr. Ravi Rudra and Mr. Selvan Naidu today on Morning Glory. And we'll end Morning Glory with a brand new episode of Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memory. Today we'll hear from Ms. Sai Sudha Narayan of Mumbai, who will share her experiences with our listeners. But first, let me introduce you to the two members of the Christmas decoration team from New Zealand. Mr. Ravi Rudra is the national president of the Sri Satya Sai Organization of New Zealand. He is a chartered accountant by profession. And Mr. Selvan Naidu is a member of the Central Council of the Sri Satya Sai Organization of New Zealand and is also the coordinator for their national projects. He works in the area of commercial real estate. So let's start by listening to the interview that I recorded just the other day with Brother Ravi Rudra and Brother Selvan Naidu from New Zealand about this year's Christmas decorations in the ashram. Sairam, dear listeners, Aroha, or Live in Love, is the theme of this year's Christmas decoration in Prashanti Nilayam. And to tell us more about it, we have two special guests with us from New Zealand, and they are Brother Selvan Naidu and Brother Ravi Rudra. Sairam, Brother Ravi and Brother Selvan, and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam.
So tell us about your group from New Zealand visiting us for Christmas of 2012.
Firstly, before I answer that question, I'd like to offer our gratitude to our beloved Bhagavan for giving us this opportunity, and also to the Prashanti Christmas Committee for inviting us to do the decorations this year. We have in total about 115 people from New Zealand that will participate with this program, which would include the decoration of the Sai Kulwantol and the surrounding areas, as well as carol singing on Christmas morning.
Must be a very exciting time for all of you.
It is. It is a real exciting time. Over and above that, you know, I must emphasize that we have had tremendous support from the devotees of New Zealand who are unable to travel to Prashanti to be with us now, and also from other countries like Australia, especially the youth of Australia, the South African team, especially the technicians that are here to give us a hand, and a few devotees from Japan and Mauritius are here as well. So we've got a great team at
and an international one, a global team.
Absolutely, it's a great,
beautiful,
great energy and atmosphere in the North Shed.
I can imagine. So what sort of preparatory work is involved in doing a project like this?
Well, as you can imagine, a project of this magnitude would have preparations taking place at many levels. At the physical level, we have prepared to firstly put together a theme.
What is this year's theme?
This year's theme is Aroha.
Oh, live in love. Live in love, yes.
So we were, about October last year, we were invited by John Burner to do the Christmas decorations.
So it's more than a year, it's 14 months.
Yeah. And immediately after that, we came over to Prashanti to join the Croatian group to learn how they went about doing their preparation.
And their decoration last year was so beautiful.
It was amazing. It was amazing.
They brought that European feel to whole of Prashanti.
Absolutely. The inside of a cathedral.
Cathedral with that stained glass feel.
It was amazing. What was more amazing was the way they went about doing the decorations. In fact, that got me a bit apprehensive because, you know, I just wondered whether we had the capacity to do it, because they worked with so much of harmony and love and so much of discipline. And at that stage, you know, I wasn't too involved in any sort of preparation to be comfortable that we could really handle it. But, you know, again, just not having faith that Swami is the real doer. But we gradually got to learn that.
Over the course of the 14 months.
Yes.
I see. That's wonderful to know. So you have a lot of coordination to do amongst your devotees?
Yes, amazing amount of coordination. When we left Prashanti and went back to New Zealand, of course, we had to immediately embark on finding a theme for our decoration. And, you know, there was a kind of a process that had to be followed. So we invited ideas from people throughout the country. And it was amazing. The kind of support and response we got was tremendous.
Must have enthused a lot of people.
It was. And the kind of enthusiasm and energy was so encouraging for us, really. So... you know, before we knew, there were ideas pouring in from all over the country. So we finally set on a theme, which is Aroha, Live in Love. And Brother Ravi Rudra will elaborate on that a little bit more in detail. So once we had a theme in place, then we had to get a symbol that represents that theme. And this symbol was the Koru symbol,
yes,
which you could see here
on your t-shirts and on your badges.
Yes, and that has colors on it. It's got the dominant color of green and blue,
purple, bluish purple,
which has a deep spiritual significance
In the Maori culture.
In the Maori culture. So once we've had the symbol, the theme, and the symbol locked in, we now had to get a design concept to apply to the various areas of decoration. We've had major challenges in this area. Again, we tried to be all-inclusive, and we went out to devotees throughout the country, and we've invited ideas again. That was also really an interesting process, because we've had ideas and prototypes coming in from children as young as 11 and adults as old as 70 years old that sent in their ideas and their drawings. And I say this was a challenge because we've had all these fantastic ideas in front of us, and they put it together with so much of love and devotion that we tried to use a bit of each person's ideas to come up with the design concept. We had a deadline to meet, and that was Guru Purnima, when the Prashanti Council sits to approve the deco design. And it was a few weeks before Guru Purnima, and we still hadn't finalized our design. And it's amazing, almost like something just unlocked at this right moment.
And the nail-biting finish,
yes,
just then.
And the ideas just flowed.
Oh, beautiful.
And it was amazing how this entire thing came together. And we sent it to the Prashanti Council, who approved it at their sitting, and they said fantastic and gave us their blessings to go ahead and do the decoration.
See, sitting in Prashanti, we're just used to walking into the Kulwant Hall and seeing one beautiful decoration after another, one theme, one color scheme after another, because life is a continuous celebration in Prashanti.
Yes.
But little do we know that there are so many steps and so much of prayer and planning and coordination involved amongst so many people and countries to get that thing up there. Was there any spiritual component to this preparatory work?
Yes, yes, there was. As I said, the preparation takes place at different levels.
Mm-hmm.
There was this physical level.
Level,
and
yes.
Then there was another level, you know.
Mm-hmm.
After the physical preparation, we're now ready to decorate, to jump on the ladders and put up the decoration and beautify God's physical abode.
Yes.
But at the same time, I think His higher purposes for giving us this opportunity was to decorate the real abode of the Lord, which is our heart.
Mm-hmm.
There's lots of preparation that has taken place alongside the physical aspect, and that was also an amazing journey on its own. We went into a deep study circle program studying the literature that was given during the pre-world conference, which is God is, I am I, love all, serve all.
Mm-hmm.
And to us, that was the most appropriate literature to study in preparation for this.
So this I am I.
I am I.
Very, so, very important here to practice that.
Yes, absolutely.
Great period in history to focus on that thought.
I believe so. Some interesting times are approaching.
Yes. Beautiful. Well, thank you for sharing those insights. Anything else that comes to mind?
Just a few things to add. After we got approval, we had to go into top gear almost to procure material and supplies to do the decoration. And New Zealand being a very, very small country, things were difficult to get, so we had to import things from China and mostly India. So we made another trip in September this year.
To buy stuff from India,
yes.
Take it back to New Zealand, only to bring it back.
Absolutely. A few things to back to New Zealand, just to engage our people, to make them feel part of this entire journey. But the majority of the stuff was manufactured and brought straight to Puttaparthi.
Okay.
And, I'd like to acknowledge the great support given to us by the young youth of the Shivam Ashram in Hyderabad, who were tremendous in assisting.
Swami's, the Sai Center in Hyderabad.
Yes, yes. And we've had great support from our team. We've got Kevin Naidu, was a surgeon, but he was our main designer. It's amazing how
with his surgical precision, he could help you with the design.
Absolutely, and he kind of—I don't know whether he took a crash course to upskill himself in the area of graphics, but he did a tremendous job. And then we had Murali, who was the IT person, who was great, as well as Mike, who was in charge of the logistics. So it was a great team that worked together to put this entire project in place.
Incredible, very beautiful, nice to hear, inspiring to know that so much of love has been involved and so much of soul searching in putting all this together.
Amazing. You know, we learned that the decoration was really not the primary purpose of this entire exercise. It was the transformation that
the team building, the transformation,
the unity,
yes,
harmony that people work together. It was really amazing.
Yes, this was just an excuse.
Absolutely.
But now that you've hyped us up and got us all excited about the Christmas decoration, let me turn to Brother Ravi. Brother Ravi, what can we expect in terms of the decor in Prashanthi Nilayam this year with the Maori theme?
Well, sister, once we settled on the theme, which was so important to us, Aroha was a very important symbol for us.
Why is that?
We learned that Swami's life, his mission, his message, his teaching, all was enshrined in one word, love.
Yes.
And this love in Sanskrit is known as prema, such a beautiful, all-encompassing word.
Mm-hmm.
And when we found that Aroha had the same significance, it was love, it was compassion, it was unity, it was harmony, it was joy, it was this sustaining, binding love was the meaning of Aroha. We felt there was no difference between prema and Aroha. Both were five letters, this wonderful word. And then when we researched Swami's discourses on the Christmas discourses over the many years, we found a very common theme that God is love, love is God, live in love, and live in God. And the commandment there seemed to be live in love.
Okay.
That was the key.
I see.
So to connect Aroha with live in love was a universal acceptance among all our members.
Mm-hmm.
And when we shared that theme, which I did personally with a Maori elder, which I'll talk about a little later, they just loved it.
Really?
And it was important to us to get that acknowledgement and acceptance.
Mm-hmm. Very gratifying it must have been.
Oh, the lady actually had tears.
Oh, so
and,
beautiful.
And I'll tell you a little bit about that, because as we settled on it, and then we had to come up with a logo to go with. And when somebody I visited came to me and said, look, we got this as a wedding gift, and showed me this made out of glass, this beautiful heart, Koru heart, with a deep blue and a deep green and a little white at the bottom. It seemed to just perfectly fit in with this theme. The reason is the blue is very important to the Maori people because it represents the earth and the sky, the ocean and the sky.
Okay, the vastness, the infinity.
Vastness, the infinity of that, which is a bit like Lord Rama and Lord Krishna, something that you cannot fathom. It's eternal.
Yeah, blue, deep blue.
And green, as you know, New Zealand is referred to as the clean, green country. You know, sort of hidden. Wherever you go, there's green. You can't escape. Just fields and parks and mountains and just filled with green.
A beautiful country.
Extremely beautiful country. It's just paradise.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course white. New Zealand is referred to as the country of the long white cloud. That's the original name, Aotearoa.
Mm-hmm.
And plus the snow-capped mountains just tops it. So we thought that this theme of Aroha, live in love with this beautiful heart, would be a perfect, you know. And that's why we chose that. And then just coming back to Tiny Drummond, the wonderful Maori elder, which I must acknowledge, who inspired me personally that we were on track. Because with Maori spirituality, you have to always follow a certain protocol.
Mm-hmm.
And this is very important for us to acknowledge the country of New Zealand and their place in this journey. I went to invite her for the first Mahasamadhi program, and what we did was we decided that we would use this theme throughout the year. We made a conscious effort to use this theme, Aroha, live in love, not just for the Christmas end of the year, but throughout the year in everything that we undertook.
Oh, beautiful.
So the Mahasamadhi program had the theme, Aroha, live in love. And so was the birthday celebration. Ladies had retreats around that and so forth. I went to invite Tiny Drummond, and I took a copy of the Divine Grace magazine that was put out by India Today, the wonderful supplement.
Yes.
And when I extended the invitation and gave this to her, she had tears, and I said, "Auntie, with respect, would you come and talk to us on Aroha, Live in Love?"
Mm-hmm.
She opened this magazine, and when she saw these pictures and some of the things of a place out here, she just tears flowed. This was on a Thursday.
Did she know about Baba before this?
She knew a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it was, if I may go back, exactly a year before. The day before Swami left his physical body,
mm-hmm.
I took a group of about 40 or 50 members from our center to meet her,
mm-hmm.
to talk about Maori spirituality.
Mm-hmm.
And at that moment, she said, "I could feel the presence of your master here."
Oh, wow. She must have been very tuned.
Very tuned in. And the 2 weeks later, because it was around Easter and things tend to close there, and I met her 2 weeks later, and she said, "I'm very sorry to hear of what happened. But there was something that I felt that there that I couldn't tell you. I couldn't put it into words." So now here I'm almost exactly a year later, just before the first year anniversary, going to extend an invitation. She was just overawed by that somebody was prepared to come and take something from their culture to as a theme for our first anniversary. This was on a Thursday. 2 days later, on a Saturday morning, she rang me. And she said, "Ravi, what is the significance of Sai Baba wearing a white robe?"
Mm-hmm.
I said, "As far as I know, he only did this on a Christmas morning. Why did you ask?" She said, "This morning, I had a vision of him."
Wow.
It wasn't a dream. It was a vision where he appeared, dressed in white.
Mm.
And he said, "You already have Aroha, Living Love." And she said, at that time it dawned to me, because I was worrying how I was going to present this topic that you had given me for your program.
Mm.
I was really worrying about it until Sai Baba told me, "You already have it."
And what do you know, huh?
And then she said, "I remember way back in 1998, I put together a whole pile of material on the theme of Aroha, and I took it to one of our leading polytechnics in Auckland, and asked him whether you would like to use this, and they discarded it."
Oh.
And this moment I realized, when Sai Baba said, "You already have it, this material is for you people."
Oh, she gave it all to you.
She came and presented it, a big binder. So what I did was, I said, "Auntie, you keep it, and what you're going to do next year is you're going to take us through this entire program, page by page, explaining the full significance." You won't believe it. It's a thick folder, beautifully prepared. So it was a lovely feel to it, that we were on track with this.
What an affirmation. You must have been a real pat on the back. Swami's with you through all this.
Absolutely. And as Brother Silvan was saying, they did a wonderful job. When they came back, they started involving everybody, going to every single center, presenting it, and people started to get excited, because there was a bit of a lull after Swami's samadhi.
I guess people were grieving and hurting.
And also question mark, what's the point of coming to Prashanti? Swami's not there, kind of a feeling.
In
and this sort of really brought the energy back, and you could feel. And I can say, deeply say, many people who'd love to be here could not be here for other reasons.
Yes.
There's one other person I'd like to mention, because we took this decoration. We have a Satyasai preschool.
Yes, I'm aware of the beautiful pictures.
In Otara. And some of the members there wanted to help with the decorations as well. One Saturday morning, we have a program that we've started now, where they themselves are running a values program, bringing children that are weak at school, and we're giving some extra help. One person came and handed me a box of 49 of the most beautiful flowers called Pohutukawa, which is part of our decoration, which I must mention as well. Now, Pohutukawa is the Christmas flower of New Zealand.
Oh, it's the poinsettia of New Zealand.
That's right. And apparently when the Europeans landed first in New Zealand, this red flower was in full bloom.
Oh, okay.
And that's why they think that they landed around this December, because it's in full bloom in December.
Right.
And so they were very, the Maori elders are very keen that we included this in their decoration. And you will see this as a very significant part in our decoration.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, this gentleman, his name is Damien Smith, he presented me with 49 flowers that he himself went and bought all the materials and single-handedly made it with so much of love and said, "Brother, this is for you."
Beautiful.
And so we had this also. You know, part of our flowers that will be going into the decoration. So you could see it was all the way there was this love that was unfolding, not just within the Sai people, but from people from the community as well. And we feel very comfortable. This is only beginning this journey. We see this will be like a mission statement throughout unfolding as we go along. And being able to reach out to people with this one message.
Beautiful. And the message is rooted in the culture of the First Nations of New Zealand.
Absolutely.
So that must strike a really deep chord.
Absolutely. And at the end of that program, at the first Samadhi program, there were about 9 Maori people who came and they did a presentation on this. The opening item was by the children who sang a beautiful Maori song dressed in a traditional Maori costume. When the curtains opened, I saw tears flowing out from these people because they never expected anything like that. They thought here was a bunch of Indians going to put an Indian program. But when they saw their traditional program and that song, it just flowed. And at the end of a 3-hour program, they said, "Everything that we heard today, we felt it in our hearts. There was nothing that we felt uncomfortable. That message was so universal and so authentic."
Swami's message.
Message with their Maori spirituality.
It just resonated because spirituality at that high level, everything is one.
Absolutely.
No one gives you a different message or a conflicting signal.
Absolutely. It was a great eye-opener to how that it's so important to us to focus on that and not get caught up in the outer.
Yes. So, very well said. Mm. Very beautiful. In New Zealand is a developed country. People have busy lives. Why would so many hardworking people spend so much of money and their holiday time to want to come here? You said 115 here and a larger number back there who have spent a year on this project, 14 months.
Very true. And not only did they give us their time and energy.
And their love.
Also supported financially as well. Because it does cost a lot to do a project of this magnitude. It's the pure miracle of Sai, this is. It's the unbounded love Swami has for us and the love we have for Swami. That is all. I can't explain in any other words. All it is His grace, His doing. And we got the most unexpected help from so many quarters. It is just unbelievable.
So miracle within a miracle within a miracle.
Within a miracle. Even one aspect of this program is going to be the carol singing. And I must just say a few words on this because when it was given to us to lead this, the Christmas carols on the Christmas morning, our national choir conductor was very keen that we would not sing the carols with a piece of paper in front of us.
Mm-hmm. So you had to memorize them.
This had to be done with absolute devotion. And you can't do that with a piece of paper in front. He said that we must all not only memorize every single carol, there are 13 carols, we must then contemplate on the meaning and feel it in our hearts so that when we come and sing, it's from heart, you know, from absolute conviction that we're celebrating the joy of the birth of Christ. This was a totally new experience to us. We thought we will never be able to do that.
13 songs to
13
learn.
13 songs to memorize it, and not only the memorizing it, but also getting the pronunciation.
And then the feel and the emotion. Deep involvement.
Very much. A lot of commitment was required. We started practicing in March every weekend. The practices went to 2 to 3 hours.
Wow, 9 months.
Exactly. And we're very lucky. We got venues free of charge to do that, and people came from a long way for practices, and here we are, and it's sort of like an icing of the cake to be able to do the decoration and the opportunity to sing in Sai Kulwant Hall, and celebrate the birth of Christ. It's just a unique experience. One other thing I didn't mention is you may see in under Aloga is referred to as New Thailand.
That is right, New Thailand instead of New Zealand.
Yes, what happened was in 1997, I was involved bringing the coming for the first World Youth Conference. There was about 26 youth that attended this. And while we were seated, Swami approached us and asked, where are you from?
Mm-hmm.
And some of the youth responded, New Zealand. And Swami said, no, New Thailand.
Mm, beautiful new name.
A beautiful name. And I think it's fitting that the theme and the whole experience is reflecting the New Thailand experience. So we're very grateful. And go back to what Brother Sylvan here said. It's entirely the grace of Bhagavan. And we are just humbled to be here, and thank you to you too, sister, for this great opportunity to be able to share.
Radio Sai, we are committed to keeping our global listenership abreast with all exciting things that happen in Prashanthi Nilayam, and I know there will be thousands and thousands of listeners and viewers who will visit our website and watch the program live through web streaming while it's happening. So they must know the background about the beautiful decoration around the ashram, and it's our joy to share it with them. So here is wishing New Sai Land the best of Aroha. So live in love, and I hope the spirit just continues. It's the holiday season, and we wish you joy on behalf of our team here at Radio Sai.
Aroha. Love and
Sai. Aroha. Thank you, Karuna.
Aroha. Sai Ram.
Welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live, coming to you from Prashanthi Digital Studios. So, dear listeners, imagine the physical and the spiritual effort that goes into decorating the ashram for Christmas each year. Now, my next guest is also a New Zealander, and she's right here in the studio, and we will talk to her about how she takes the message of Bhagwan Baba to her fellow New Zealanders through her creativity. Lynn Kriegler is a book illustrator, scriptwriter, and oral storyteller. Originally from United States, Lynn was born in the town of Niagara Falls. Her career as a staff artist and art director saw her work for a variety of organizations such as Mademoiselle Magazine, Woodward and Lothrop, and the Washington Post, not to mention the most loved and read e-journal among spiritual seekers, our very own Heart to Heart from Radio Sai. So next time you're reading an inspiring story in Heart to Heart, be sure to check the credit at the bottom of the page. More often than not, the name of the artist will be Lynn Kriegler. Lynn migrated to New Zealand from the U.S. in 1974, and since then she has illustrated 152 books for children, teens, and adults. Lynn also visits schools all over New Zealand, conducting workshops for students, teachers, and parents in writing, oral storytelling, puppetry, drama, role plays, human values, and developing effective, positive communication skills and creative interactions between children and adults. Today we'll talk to Lynn about the bridge building she promotes in New Zealand, or should I say New Thailand, as Swami would say. Sai Ram, Lynn, and welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live.
Sai Ram, Kanura. Thank you.
Lynn, you have an unusual career path. It's quite an eclectic mix of all things creative with the sole aim of nurturing the human spirit. What exactly do you do now?
What I do now is juggle about 9 balls in the air at once. When I'm speaking to children, they say, what do you do? And I say, I have 9 jobs today. Tomorrow I might have 16. But my primary work is with building bridges of communication between children, teens, and adults, getting them talking, finding the right word. Communication is so important. If you have good communication with anyone, you have a shared reality. And when you have a shared reality, you have affinity. You feel comfortable with each other. You feel you can open your heart to each other.
Very well put together. And there is also an element of art that you bring onto your work. Now, how did you get started on this path?
That's a very good question. My father read to me from a very early age. We always had stories before bedtime. It was always my dad who read to us. When I say us, my sister and I, my younger sister, Karen. My mother was always doing the dishes or cleaning up, but my dad made sure we had stories before bedtime.
What a nice family practice.
Yes, yes. In fact, it's essential, because when you're very young, you're like a sponge. You soak up everything, and he would always show me the pictures in the book. We had an eclectic mix of stories. We had Hurlbut stories from the Bible. We were a Lutheran Christian family, so every night included a Bible story. Then he might read from some of my favorite books. It might be Hans Christian Andersen or American folk tales, mm-hmm. such as the Rutabaga Tales, the Tar Baby, which is now not a very PC book, but in my day it was. Pippi Longstocking, Black Beauty, The Arabian Nights, Rudyard Kipling. I had a wonderful introduction to oral sound patterns, mm-hmm. and being shown the pictures prompted me to start drawing from the age of 3.
Mm-hmm. And you know, they say a picture speaks 1,000 words, so pictures are very effective tools of communication. How do you bring the human values element into all that you do?
Well, every good story is a code for a value.
How do you mean?
Well, a good story encodes a value. Like, for example, Cinderella.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is a well-loved story. It's persisted through the ages. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because there is a thread of truth, pure truth, running through the Cinderella story.
Which is what?
Well, to have patience, even if you're living in poverty, have patience. The evil sisters make fun of her and make her do all the bad tasks while they go out dancing and seeking the magic prince. Cinderella is patient. She puts up with all their barbs.
But she's the silent, suffering kind. She must be undergoing a lot of emotional trauma.
She is, but she has a fairy godmother. Now, who is the fairy godmother? Godmother. Ma. She has a fairy godmother who suddenly appears and says, you too shall go to the ball mm-hmm. and meet the handsome prince, etc., etc. So there's a very much an element of be patient, all good things come to those who wait.
Mm-hmm.
I like weaving in wise sayings and maxims and aphorisms. You know, a wise saying mm-hmm. is a very fine way of learning human values. But you've got to sugarcoat it in a good story for a child to get their attention, with beautiful pictures, because words plus pictures equals imagination, understanding, flights of fancy, and understanding the human value. It is like taking a sugar pill.
Mm-hmm.
The value, sometimes you don't want to hear what it is to do the right thing. There's a verse in the Mahabharata that says, I know what is good, but I do not want to do it.
Yes.
You know, I know what is bad, and oh, I want to do it. I only do as I am told to do by something in my heart. So wrote the anguished author of the Mahabharata over, 7,000 years ago. And those words are very true today. Something in your heart tells you good or bad. It's a voice within. And many children say to me, oh, Lynn, I've got a lion in my heart. I've got a dragon in my brain.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a, one little boy said to me the other day, he was a boy from Malaysia. He said, I've got a zombie in my brain. And another little boy said, I've got a monkey in my heart. And of course, these are the animal traits that are in all of us. And children, well, when I bring out my puppets, I say, who in here is a monkey? Every hand goes up. Who's a lion? Many hands go up. Who's a pussycat? Meow, meow, meow. Many of the girls will put, I'm a pussycat. And this is charming to me. And it's a great way of teaching the human values.
So this spin that you put on learning through storytelling and illustrations, how do parents and students and adults and especially educators respond to this approach?
Their chin comes up and a light comes on in their eyes. And when that happens, I know I've done my job. Many teachers say to me, oh, I wish I had pursued my writing. I wish I had pursued my art. I worked as a children's book editor for some years, and I would get book submissions from firemen who had just retired or policemen who wanted to leave their footprint in the sand. They'd lived a good life, and now they wanted to write about it. And 99% of these manuscripts were unpublishable, but it came from their heart. And I would always say to them, you publish this and give it to your children. Self-publish, give it to your children. We can't make commercial book out of it. Everyone wants to leave their knowledge and their footprint in the sand, I say. And talking about books and stories and pictures and magic and puppets brings this out in every single person, because there's a child in every person wanting to come out and play.
Do you find it challenging to integrate human values in your work in the mainstream New Zealand society?
Not at all. Several years ago, New Zealand was the first country, to my knowledge, in the Western world to make a mandate that every school in New Zealand must have a values program. And so every school had to initiate a program. Now, some schools are more sports-oriented, and so their values will be fair play, teamwork, coordination, and so on. Other schools are more art-oriented or literature-oriented, and so these themes will be more about, the values will be courage, truth. And you will go in many, many schools all over New Zealand, and they will have the values for that school posted in the staff room, in the reception area, in the classroom. I've been in schools, they have never heard of Swami, but love all, serve all is on the wall. Help ever, hurt never is, the words are there. It's as though the understanding of human values is a very ancient truth. And it has run through literature and art and music, and every activity on earth has a thread of the human values running through it. And it's up to us to draw it out through storytelling. Even you can go into a big corporation and do storytelling to the staff, especially when there is conflict in the organization. People aren't pulling together. They have private agendas. This is happening a lot in the West at the moment. Some of these corporations are breaking down. They're losing money. And I can go into a corporation and tell stories.
And how are they received?
Very well. Everyone wants to tell a story. We are all telling stories every day. You call up your brother or sister, oh, so-and-so said to me, blah, blah, blah.
So we all have a narrative going on in our head, even when we are quiet, I guess.
All the time. We are all nascent writers. We are all nascent storytellers. Everyone has it in them. Many teachers say to me, oh, Lynn, I wish I could do this. I say, you're already doing it. You're telling me a story right now. Oh, I wish I could do it. Who are you? What character are you? Are you the poor little match girl? Are you the dragon queen? And the eyes light up. A grown teacher, and they'll say, no, I'm a fairy princess in a dragon suit. And my mother-in-law says I'm a banshee, and my husband says I'm a caterpillar. And we're away. We've got a story. Mm-hmm. We've got a film script. We've got a movie. We've got an epic. We've got a legend. We've got a myth. Stories are all around us. I could make a story out of this water bottle. I could make a story out of a stick. I could make a story out of a stone. And incorporate a value. Just make it up as you go along.
This is incredible to hear about how you can find a human value and a story in everything, every day to epic. Now, have you ever had an opportunity to speak to Bhagwan about this work that you do?
He spoke to me about it, Karina.
Tell us all about it.
In 1995, he called for my first interview, our first interview. It was a group of about 21 New Zealanders, New Zealanders, with Mata Betty Poyser, who is a much beloved personality in her own right. I was her editor for a number of her books and designed their covers. I had also done two books with New Zealand author Peter Phipps, The Gospel for the Golden Age.
I have read those beautiful books.
Beautiful. I did the cover and I was his editor. Also some work from Madeline Gilliman, Spirituality and Science. And I had also done some work for some elders here in the ashram who would like to remain anonymous. But their books are still available. So by this time I had done about 15 books for devotees. And Swami looked at me and he said, how are you, madam? And I said, very well, Swami, very happy. And he said, good, good. What are you doing? And I said, books, Swami, your books. And he said, no, no. And he spread his hands wide like two big stars. And he said, our books. I am very, very happy. You are a good girl. Your mind is sometimes like a monkey, sometimes in the marketplace, because I'm always thinking shopping, 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 shopping. I love shopping. Swami likes shopping too. And I'm going, yes, Swami, yes, Swami. And he said, I will help. So I'm taking this to mean he's going to help my monkey mind.
He'll enroll you in Shopaholic Anonymous.
Well, also that, or he'll make me his personal shopper, which is what I feel like now. I'm always shopping for the kids, you know, or
Balvikas, SSC.
I'm always doing the shopping. And one of my favorite...
Retail therapy.
Oh, Swami loves shopping. I've got a photo of him packing bags full of goodies for the staff. You know, and he's going, ooh, ooh, bags, bags. He's got this lovely look on his face. It's just a casual shot, but I treasure it. So then he said, what else? Oh, he looked at me with his eyes sparkling. And he wanted to look at a jacket cover that I had designed for Mata Betty. And on the back, Mata had wanted Swami standing on the globe of the earth. Mm-hmm. And Swami looked at it and he said, not good, artificial, mm-hmm. change photo. And so he would go through my submissions for books. He would correct words. He would correct, you know, images, what he would like. And we had done a book with Mata Betty and her husband. Jim and Betty had bred Labrador guide dogs, the first guide dogs in New Zealand. Mm-hmm. And we had included a picture of Betty's late husband, Jim, with one of their prize mm-hmm. dogs, Blue. Mm-hmm. And Swami said to Mata Betty, husband, 10 years ago, he is with me. And Jim had passed from a heart condition 10 years previously, and Mata was so happy. And he said, husband is with God. And then he opens the book, and he comes to the photo of Jim with the dog, and he said, husband is with God. No, husband is with dog. See? D-O-G, G-O-D, all one. Mm-hmm. And Ma was so happy. And we were all cracking up because he was so pleased with his little wordplay. And again, he's teaching, you know, D-O-G, G-O-D.
It's all the same.
Yeah. So like this, he would play with the books. And then he would sign the title page, you know, with love, Baba. So we always included that. But he was the master publisher, art director, creative director, copywriter. And to work with him like that was quite an eye-opener. And at the end of my second interview, he came to me and gave me a huge packet of Vibhuti packets. And he pushed my hand, my left hand so hard, I nearly fell over on the floor. And he made his eyes go really big like this. And he looked into my eyes. He said, book center. And I said, book center, Swami. And I didn't know, what does he mean? Because I thought, does he mean I'm supposed to open a bookstore? I can't afford to open a bookstore. But in the end, we established the Satchasai bookstore and book center in New Zealand.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing these wonderful insights with us, and really appreciate having you on the show.
Thank you very much.
And he's wishing you a holy Merry Christmas on behalf of the entire team at Radio Sai.
And to everyone in New Zealand and the world, a very, very happy Christmas and a joyous New Year. Thank you, Karuna. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure having you. Sai Ram Din.
Sai Ram.
And now, dear listeners, it's time to move on to the feature presentation on Morning Glory. Today in Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, we bring you part one of a new episode. And in conversation with me today is Swami's student from Mumbai, Ms. Sai Sudha Narayan. Over now to Sai Sudha Narayan. Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome back to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with Bhagwan students who have passed out from his schools and colleges. Our guest today is Ms. Sai Sudha Narayan. Sai Sudha Narayan studied at Bhagwan's Anandpur campus, where she completed not only her degree, but prior to the degree, she also did her intermediate studies, which is grade 11 and 12, at the Sri Satyasai Arts and Science College for Women at that time. And this she completed in the years 1982 to 84. Subsequently, she enrolled in the Sai University and completed her bachelor's degree in science in the year 1987. And she went on to earn herself a bachelor's degree in education from the Satyasai University. And her batch was one of the two lucky batches that got to study for their bachelor's degree in education at the Whitefield campus. Currently, Sai Sudha works in a supervisory capacity, assisting the principal of a school in suburban Mumbai. She is teaching in the same location for the past 24 years and she's really committed to her job, as to many things else, because she's also deeply involved in the Sri Satya Sai Seva organization of Mumbai, where she works in almost all areas, be it bhajan singing, balvikas, teaching, seva or whatever. And currently, Sai Sudha is an active member also of the Sri Satya Sai Vidya Vahini project. Sairam Sai Sudha and welcome to Radio Sai.
Sairam Karuna.
Sai Sudha, your life is totally revolving around Swami and your commitment is really exemplary. Tell us, how did it all begin?
Actually, it's a very fairy tale beginning, if I may say so. Because my association with Bhagwan started off even before my birth.
So your parents were devotees?
No, I need to get back into a little flashback for that.
Sure.
My parents were married and for 10 years after their marriage, they did not have a kid. After 10 years of marriage, the first child was born and unfortunately the baby boy was stillborn. So my mother was completely shattered. They had not heard of Bhagwan. They did not know who he was. My father was working as a customs officer in Kerala. So he used to keep getting posted to different places in Kerala. And they happened to come to this particular place, Cochin, where opposite their house, where they were stationed, the yesteryear's film star Padmini, her elder sister Lalita, had a flat. And she used to have these bhajan sessions going on in her house. Now, you know how the ladies are. So my mother started moving around there and she found the bhajan very soothing. So slowly she came home and told my dad, is it okay if I attend those bhajan sessions and I start singing? My father said, you can do what you want, but don't ask me to worship some afro-haired man. And so it went on. And then,
so Padmini's, actress Padmini's sister Lalita had Sai bhajans going on,
yes,
in her house?
Yes, yes. So then a few months later, the bhajan session, slowly mom wanted to have one in her house. And so she asked my father and he said, okay, you can you sing, you keep, don't ask me to come and sing. I'm not going to sing. And slowly, can I get a photograph in the house? And, you know, and then there was this vehicle that was going with empty. There's a one seat. Can you just join in, Mr. and Mrs. Narayan? And that's how they started coming.
Oh, so a vehicle coming to Puttaparthi.
They would just come in. There would be place and they would just come. My mother was instantly drawn towards Bhagwan. But my father was very, very skeptical. But all the interviews that Bhagwan gave at that time was to my father.
And this is prior to your birth?
All this happened prior to my birth. 3-4 months later, she had just conceived. And one of the days, I think my father had come here and Bhagwan had given him an interview. And gave him lots of vibhuti to give it to my mother. So my father took all that. Now he's slowly, he was like, you know, this is a great man, a saint, a person with great powers. But not yet, he had not accepted him as God. Now, the 9th month into her pregnancy, second pregnancy. And my father left her in the care of a servant to look after her. And he came to Parthi. Swami called him for an interview and he said, tell your wife, this time will not be like last time. And my father just stared. How did he know what happened to my first kid? And then Swami said, according to you, it is 10 months. But according to my calculation, it's only the 9th month. And he went on to predict the year and the month in which I would be born. He said 11th December. My father was just stunned. I still have the letter which he wrote then in Malayalam script to my mother. My mother still treasures that letter in which Bhagwan had said this. And so my father came home and he just told my mom that if the kid is born, because even the doctors give you a tentative date. Nobody exactly says the baby will be born on this particular day. And so when I was born, my father's joy knew no bounds. It was 11th December and he accepted that Swami is God. And I think 2 months after my birth, my first trip to Parthi was, I think, when I was 60 days. And I was just placed at Bhagwan's feet and Swami, very sweetly, he would talk to my parents in Tamil always.
Although they're Malayali?
No, we are Tambrams. We stay in the border of Kerala, so we speak both Tamil and Malayalam.
Okay.
So, and he just kept there for a second. He said, enough, take the child, he said. And then that's how the whole journey began.
I'm guessing your name was given.
Everything. The name, everything has a little story, actually. It so happened that 2 months, there's no name. And my father now wanted everything to be done only by Bhagwan.
And so, what to do? Swami was not keeping the name. Somehow it was not materializing. There was this old, where they used to stay in. At that time they were stationed in Alappi, I think. And at that time there used to be an old lady who used to play the harmonium and sing bhajans. And she told my parents, how long can you have a kid with no name? I mean, you got to call her something. So, but my father said, no, but we want Swami to keep the name. He said, whatever it is, call the kid some name. And then whatever Swami decides, you can keep the name for the kid. So they came up with a lot of names, Sai Lata, Sai Geeta. And finally, that old lady said, let's call her Sai Sudha. And let's see what happens. Now see the beauty of it. The next time, 5-6 months later, they come to Parthi with me. And first thing that Swami asked my father is, what do you call her at home? And so my father said, oh, we're right, we've not named, we want you to do the naming, Swami. But he again went on, he said, what do you call her at home? So we call her Sai Sudha. And then he went on to explain, he said, do you know the meaning? That is a very nice name, but do you know what it means? It means the nectar of Sai. And that was the first time the feeding of the first, the morsel, the food, the solid food, that was done by Bhagwan.
And the name was confirmed.
And the name was confirmed.
Okay. So this was in the 1960s?
Yes.
Wow. So a long time you've been coming here. And then I guess you went through the whole Balvikas program.
Mom was a Balvikas guru. So at home, the situation was like, I took it for granted, you know. Look, I am the Balvikas guru's daughter. And, you know, kind of, I knew. I mean, I was born into an environment with bhajans. But I must go back, if you may permit so, to another incident when I was about 2.5 years old. This was in Parthi again. And there was this very famous singer in Parthi, Vijaya. And she was teaching my mother some bhajans. And my mom was holding on to me. And she sang this Jai Jai Devi Girija Mata, which has a line called Ashta Bhujangita Akila Dharini. And before my mom could repeat, I had said it. And her joy knew no bounds, Vijaya. She just took me, and Swami's mother was, Mother Ishwarama was passing by, and she just took me to her, and she said, look at this girl.
This girl did this stuff.
And Amma went on, you know, she said, Chepu Ma, Chepu. And I asked my mother, she said, yes, you did repeat it. And she was so thrilled.
Ashta Bhujangini.
Ashta Bhujangita Akila Dharini.
Wow, that's a mouthful for a 2.5-year-old.
Exactly. So, Mother Ishwarama's blessings were also there.
Amazing. Wow, you're such a blessed childhood. And then you went to school wherever your parents were posted, going through the Balvikas program.
All, every little bit, even the admission, I must say, has a little story. I'm sorry to, I mean...
Admission to what?
To admission to a school. My parents then got shifted from Kerala to Mumbai, much against my mother's wishes. She didn't want to come. But then they had to be shifted, and so they came to Mumbai. And they went to a suburb, it was in Chembur, and they went to a school there. They asked for donation. The first thought that my mom had when she came back home is, Swami, this is your child. And your child, they're asking you donation. How is it? I mean, what do we do now? And those days, 500 rupees, that is what they had asked us. But in the 60s and 70s, that was quite an amount. So my mother was a little perturbed. And at night, Swami, he still comes in her dreams, very often interacts with her. So he spoke to her and he said, for my daughter, you need 500. I will give 5,000. Yeah. And he just disappeared. Mom got up the next day. She told my dad about it. He said, as usual, you imagine Swami speaking to you. And anyway, it was, my father had this habit of taking us out once it's a holiday. So we went out the next day. And the little kid that I was, my eyes fell on a lottery ticket. And I said, I want that right now. Now, why would a kid of 5 and 6 ask for a lottery ticket?
It was early to start gambling.
Exactly. It's quite baffling. I mean, the kid would have asked for a toy, or the kid would have asked for anything.
Chocolate, something.
Yeah. And I made a big noise and I howled and I almost, out of sheer desperation, my father just pulled out a ticket and just tore it into my hands and shoved it into my hands and said, here, take it. And then I was perfectly all right. The next day, you guessed it, we opened the newspapers and there it was, 5,000 rupees.
Wow. You started playing lottery rather early.
That was
and you made your first, that was a huge amount of money at that time.
And the beauty of it is when my parents took me to school, the school did not even take, they took me in without a donation.
And you got to keep the 5,000 rupees.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So my father, he did something. He put another 1,000 rupees and he made a set of 4 gold bangles. I still have one of them with me. I haven't changed the design. I haven't changed anything out of it. It is exactly the same as it was that many years ago, because I somehow feel that this was Bhagwan's gift. And people have told me why it's an outdated, you know, but I haven't changed.
Where are the other three?
The other three are with Mom.
Okay.
But I haven't, I said, let me just wear one, but I need them. This is from Bhagwan to me.
I never heard a story where Swami let someone into a lottery ticket and made them win the next day. Oh, what a nice, feel happy story. Mm-hmm. And then how did Anandpur happen? It was just a natural thing for you guys because...
No, actually by then, you know, I became a typical Mumbai girl with, you know, going to the Mumbai schools and wanting to join Mumbai college. And Bhagwan was there, was always there. But somehow he was not the center of the life. He was there at the back of my...
Don't tell me you had Bollywood aspirations.
No, not at all. Not at all. But then regular Mumbai college and, you know, getting into which college and where will I get in and all that. Suddenly, before the results, 2-3 months before, a very close family friend of ours, all the three daughters were studying at Anandpur and they had come back during the vacation. And I got to interact with them. And I was charmed with the stories they told me about Anandpur and about Bhagwan coming there. And in a matter of a month, by the time my results were declared, I had made a complete U-turn and I had decided that if I want to study, I would study only at Anandpur.
No more the Mumbai colleges?
No, nothing.
And then you came for grade 11 and 12 first in intermediate and then you went on to do your degree. What are your fondest memories of the 5 years at Anandpur?
Oh, the first year itself was so beautiful because I remember when we joined in 82, that was the year that the university was getting established. And we all had to go in this huge procession. I remember in Bhagwan... gave us a lovely, I think it was a Jaipuri Georgette sari. And I still remember his words, which are still ringing in my ears. And he said, even your mother will not gift you a sari as beautiful as this.
I have it also.
And it's such memories. I mean, that was the first time I had come into the institution. And here was Bhagwan, my first sari. And the words that went into it. So very sentimentally attached, the sari is still there. But it has so many memories associated with it. That was my first year in Anandpur. And then I think that year he also visited, he used to visit our campus at least once a year. And I had this great ambition of going on stage before Bhagwan for I don't know what reasons, but I used to always fancy, you know, speaking in front of him and talking in front of him and acting in front of him. And... they were doing some play on Panchatantra, and I remember, and somebody came the previous day and said, there's nobody to become a tree. Would you be willing to become one?
Of course.
I said, anything to go on stage, but would you just let me put my specs on? Because, you know, I won't be able to see Bhagwan. So they said, look, we'll tie you up with branches and all. And you can, you know, slowly through the branches, you could see Bhagwan, which I was okay with.
You were a spectacles-wearing tree.
And I had to be tied up completely from head to toe, brown cloth and all.
The trunk and the leaves.
Everything. And then they had put the live, they had cut the branches and they had put the things on me.
A lot of weight on
you. It was a lot of weight and Bhagwan's discourse was never ending. So the tree could not move. Backstage I was and I couldn't bear the weight, but I said, let me hold on. And while everybody was enacting and all of us were sitting there and you were also there and all of us were there and I was getting to watch Bhagwan uninterrupted from the stage. Now, it so happened that, you know, ma'am in the hostel and the college, this is a very beautiful incident. They had instructed us very specifically that we, girls who were there in the play, were to enter the hostel from the back, from the kitchen end. Because Bhagwan had to be escorted, he was supposed to be taken to the library where there was some fancy dress going on. And then all the rangoli and the decorations were done in the front gate of the hostel. So there were a couple of us. I don't remember how many of us were there. We couldn't walk because I was tired, but somehow we managed to...
Hopping your way.
Yeah. And as we were, you know, we had reached the back of the library and we just saw Bhagwan coming out of the library. And instead of going from the front, he threw all the preparations out of the gear. He just took a back route. He entered from the kitchen.
Oh, that's your route.
Yes. And he turned back and we were stunned because we just stopped wherever we were. He turned and he said, come.
Oh, follow me.
And we didn't know what, because ma'am would be angry. You know, we were just coming along with Bhagwan. And by then the news came, so all the teachers and the staff and everybody came. And here we were royally following Bhagwan. But out of fear that ma'am would say something. But then we had no option. But that's how Bhagwan was. He would throw all your plans out of the window.
I know. Incredible.
And the cook, he was also surprised that Bhagwan had chosen
the had all the elaborate preparations and decorations in the front gate, but Swami chose the back.
We had the cook that he was stunned that Bhagwan had entered from.
Always.
Bhagwan was quite happy.
Springing blissful. Surprises all the time. He loved to see the expression. Everybody was taken aback.
There was another incident which happened many years later. But that was also in Anantapur. And this was a time when again Bhagwan had called up saying that he would be coming. And you know how ma'am was. We would have a rehearsal, you know, in the dining hall. Who sits where and everything. The whole thing was rehearsed. Now, I had this little camera, amateur, that I was... I just wanted to dabble in photography, and many times, you know, the head would get cut. But I just enjoyed the fact that I had a camera in hand, and the girls with the camera were allowed to follow Bhagwan. So we 4-5 of us were given permission. Now, Bhagwan had entered the dining hall and we were standing outside. Like, we knew we were not supposed to enter. And the minute he looked, he asked us to come in.
Oh, he beckoned you?
Yes, he beckoned us. So we were about to go to our respective places, yeah, because which were assigned. And the rows in front of Bhagwan were empty. So he said, come and sit here. And that's it. There was absolute confusion. Everybody, because by then the girls had come. So all the seating arrangements had gone for a toss. Now, we were sitting very close to Bhagwan's table. And who would want to miss this opportunity of Bhagwan having a little, eating, having his lunch. And so I made sure that the girl next to me also, that we were not served much and we were pushing it off into the other girl's plate so that we could keep our hands free to click. You can't escape from Bhagwan. He noticed that the plates were empty and he called those girls and he said,
Serve them food.
And so we had no option. We couldn't click further because we had to eat and he couldn't waste, you know. So
beautiful. What fond memories. Huh?
Absolutely.
You can never forget
Absolutely.
It. Those few moments. I remember just once chanting Brahmarpanam in his presence and how special that was, sitting right in front of the...
We were literally wiping our hands in that little kerchief of ours and putting it aside because we didn't want to miss the moment.
To just click away.
And those beautiful snaps where ma'am is serving Bhagwan and Bhagwan is just putting it into his mouth.
Yeah. It seems surreal. No, it seems you dreamt it. It's almost like it never happened. So Sai Sudha, after you completed your bachelor's degree in science... You went on to do your bachelor's in education.
Because I didn't want to go back home.
So you wanted to prolong your stay at Bhagwan.
And by then, yes. In the final year of Anantapur, we had heard that Bhagwan had started this B.Ed. college in Whitefield. And from their experiences, you know, they were mind-blowing.
Yeah, the first few batches
had amazing stories to tell us. And we didn't want to be deprived. So when we came to know that there is this, and it was just 1 year, so why not? The least that I wanted in my childhood was to become a teacher.
Oh, really?
That was the last thing on my mind, trust me.
But then you decided to embrace that, although it was not a...
No, I just took up B.Ed. primarily to be with Bhagwan for one more year.
Okay.
I wanted to do anything but stay on.
Okay.
There was just no way.
Even if it meant studying education.
Even if it meant doing anything, I was prepared to pursue MA English. I was ready to do anything just to prolong my stay as a student. I didn't want to go back.
And you are an only child.
Yes.
Your parents must have missed you sorely.
This is another story that I need to tell you because I lost my father when I was 10. And, my mother had to bring me up all alone, but then Bhagwan had predicted this even before I was born. In one of the interviews which he gave to my parents, he said, and my mother was very, very, she used to be scared. I mean, if somebody took out even a dagger or a knife in a movie, she would hide behind someone. And she would not enter a room if there was no current. Swami said that. He told my father, she's so scared. Ek zamana aisa aega where she will live all alone by herself.
Oh, a time will come. What did they make of it? Did they understand?
They didn't understand a thing. And I had lost my father when I was 10. My mom and I were living alone in a big city like Mumbai. My mother was given the job in the customs headquarters. So she used to work And after my 10th, I was also in Anantapur. So my mom actually stayed for 6 long years alone in the city of Mumbai just because of Bhagwan.
And she had to overcome all her fears.
Everything. By then she had already overcome everything when she started going to office. Because that's the kind of... Actually, he had said this when before my father passed away. In Mumbai, they were giving the Balvikas Guru certificates. Those days, an exam would be conducted and certificates were given. And Bhagwan had this certificate of my mom. And he was calling out, Vishalakshmi Narayan kaun hai? And my mother was petrified. Probably, I've done something wrong, she said. She was just sitting at his feet. And she said, it's me, Swami. And he just did this with his hand, Vishalakshmi, towards the one side, and Narayan.
Oh, your father's name. So he sort of his hand parted away.
With his hand. And then he told my mother a very, very poignant statement. He said, Swami ka naam bhi Narayan hai. Tumko malum hai? Do you know that Bhagwan's name is Narayan? We inferred it after my father passed away, meaning to say that here I am going to take control of your entire life.
I will be the Narayan in your life, in not your life, husband.
Not your husband.
Did he die of illness, your father?
He was not illness, I would say. He was anemic and he was admitted. But then towards the end, within a week of his being admitted, he started developing other complications. But then my father knew all along. Bhagwan had already told him. Because he seemed quite oblivious to the fact, you know, that he wouldn't be there and that both of us need to look after ourselves and things like that. But this is again an incident.
What do you mean oblivious means he didn't know? No, you mean he was prepared for this fact?
Yeah, yeah. But I think Bhagwan must have given an interview where he must have spoken to Dad, because Dad knew about it all along. He kept saying, this is your last Diwali. He would buy things for us and he said, who knows, you know, next time. And he would throw hints like that. What will you do if I'm not there? And, you know, I'll watch you and things like that. So we never, I was too small. I mean, I was just in the fifth standard.
What would a kid know?
Did
he have life insurance?
Yeah.
So he prepared himself
for
the family.
But my mom knew nothing.
Oh, it must have been such a learning curve for her.
But Swami prepared her completely. I mean, the lady that you see today is not even a shadow of what she was those days.
So she's come such a long ways?
Absolutely long way.
If she didn't have Swami, the real Narayan, holding her hand, it would have been so different.
And this was soon after my father passed away. I remember this incident very clearly. There was no telephone. There was only one telephone in the entire building. And Bhagwan was supposed to come. You know, those days he used to visit Mumbai for a week, for 10 days. And the entire schedule was prepared. My father was very involved in the organization. So he had put in a word with Mr. Indulal Shah. And uncle had said that, look, I can't guarantee you an interview with Bhagwan, but I'll put you all in a place where Bhagwan can see both of you. We can do that much for you. So the next day the bus was arranged and we were supposed to leave. Now, there was only one telephone in the entire building and my mother had gone to sleep that night. Still today, she doesn't know whether it's a dream or a vision. Bhagwan appeared in front of her and my father is standing there behind. And then Bhagwan says, I believe they've arranged some program in Mumbai and some interview and all. Look, I'm very busy. I'm not coming to Mumbai. So you ask me whatever you want to ask me now. And then my mother went on about my education, about the house, and whatever she had, he cleared all her doubts. Now, how could she tell me the next day morning? How could a 10-year-old understand what a dream or a vision is? Around 5 o'clock, we get a call from that house which has saying that, ma'am, Baba has cancelled this program. He's not coming to Mumbai. He has no time. Exactly the words that Bhagwan used for mom.
This was after your father had passed away?
This was soon after my father passed away. And I don't remember ever a program being cancelled when already preparations were made.
So he just held her hand and walked her through life. Gave her the strength to live without her only child for 6 years.
Yes.
And now you take care of your mom.
Yes.
It's beautiful. God bless you. So tell me, what do you recall the most about your 1 year in Whitefield? The year you just decided to study only for the sake of being close to Swami. That was the reason.
That 1 year had so many memories. Enough to last for a lifetime. Too many things, you know. There was this little, I remember one incident where we were, Bhagwan was supposed to come to the hostel. And ma'am had asked us to, you know, I said, can I make a collage? Because I had assisted in the collage in Anantapur. So I said, ma'am, if you could give me some pictures and a scissor. And
you were a very small group of girls.
Yes, we were just 23.
So such
and Bhagwan had remarked when he entered, 23rd November.
His birthday.
He linked it to that instantly. So we had prepared this little collage, two of us, three of us, whole night we were staying up, and there was this very unique photograph of Bhagwan opening the interview room door and peeping. Okay, his head is out, and I put it in a backdrop of a house, and I gave the caption, "Did you call me?" And I remember saying that, "Look, I've called you. I hope you heard." Okay. Now, I was alone when we had done this. And we put up this collage. Others helped. And when Bhagwan came, he spoke to us in the room. And then ma'am took him around to see the place. And she said, "Swami, this collage has been done by the girls." He read out a few, but he made sure that I was a little away from where Bhagwan was standing. But he read it out loud so that I could hear him. "Did you call me?" He read out that line, and I instantly knew. I knew why he had said that, because, you know, we had done it when we were alone. But those were little, you know, very beautiful moments, and I never tried to outwit Bhagwan, and I tried doing that. We wanted a photograph with Bhagwan, because we had just heard that he had clicked photographs with Anantpur girls.
Okay.
So, the minute he came inside our hostel, you know, we asked him, "Bhagwan, we'd love to have a photograph with you." "Okay, okay." And I thought I was doing the smartest thing on earth. I walked near the wall and I stood with my back against the wall, thinking that Bhagwan would come and stand next to me. Okay, so I could, you know, hold his hand along with mine and we would stand. So I thought it was a very coveted position. And Bhagwan did just the opposite. He came and stood in front of me. Now,
so you're facing each other?
No, he stood in front of me. My back is against the wall. I thought he'd stand next to me.
Okay, he's in front of you.
And he stood in front of me.
So you were behind him.
No, but his hair covered. I couldn't be seen in the photograph. So, you know, if you watch the photograph even now, everybody's standing and I'm like peeping just to see that my face is seen, because he's huge.
His hair was so huge, it would just hide your face completely.
And I was the only one peeping away into that photograph. I thought I had done the smartest thing. Never tried to.
Smart him never worked.
Never works. And the most, perhaps the most beautiful thing was the last day of our exams. And he had called us for an interview inside the Trai. Most beautiful thing. We went there. And ma'am had made lovely bhajiyas. That's another story. I have to tell you this. And as soon as we enter the Trai, he comes out from behind and he says, "Dekho, tum bhi time pe aaya, Swami bhi time pe aaya. You've come on time, Swami's also come on time." And we settled ourselves, and then we noticed he was carrying a lot of things in his hand. One hand there was money, and one hand there were a lot of chocolates and sweets. And he just removed the bundle and he started giving us money.
Cash.
And we just looked at him and said, "Swami." And then the statement that he made, "Daughters never go empty-handed from their mother's house." All of us were in tears. I mean, we had heard that initial batches, you know, in Anantpur, when it had begun, Swami would give them cash. But for us, it was out of the blue, and it was such a beautiful, it's not the money, but what he said. We still have it. It was a 50 rupee denomination. I just looked at it the other day and I still have it. 100 rupees to each one of us, including ma'am. All of us, he gave the money. So very precious. And then when we had planned, before we got into Trai, that we are going to ask Swami that we need to speak in front of him. It's not fair that the boys speak every time. And so we had decided that come this opportunity, we are going to ask. So when Bhagwan said, "Amy Samacharam, what news?" We said, "Bhagwan, we'd like to speak in front of you." And Bhagwan, "Meer Matlaadthara, will you speak?" "No, no." "Yes, Swami," we said. And then he said, "No, but there'll be boys." And he tried to, you know, give us a picture that it is very difficult. You know, there are men sitting there are boys sitting there, there's a huge crowd. How will you speak? He tried to deter us from the... But we stuck on and we said, "No, Swami." And I just looked him into the eye. I think I've never done that before. And I said, "Meerunte maakem bayam ledu. If you're there, we are not scared." He said, "Acha? Speak." I mean, it was that informal. You took
on your challenge. Get up and speak. Let's see it, how you do it.
You know, and then he went on to talk about all other things. How will you take care of the kid once you get married? Some girls wanted to know all that. Then he said, you know, never leave your kid with an ayah. You know, the ayah and the driver will have their own outing behind the car. And you know, he went on with all that. And so at the end of it, he materialized Vibhuti and put it in Madam's hand. And from her palm, he called each one of us and he put it on our forehead. And I can't tell you how beautiful that experience is, because he suddenly appears, he doesn't appear as tiny as he is. He's huge. You just can't look at him. You had to close your eyes because you could only feel his, I couldn't bring myself to look at his face.
So luminous.
Beautiful. It's huge. You'll get drowned in those eyes.
And just the gentle touch of his finger on your forehead.
Yes, I just let myself feel just that. And then we thought, by the end of the interview, probably what has happened to all our speaking, you know, we came with so much of. As he was about to leave in and we were about to go back to the Kalyan Mandap, he said, so how many girls are speaking? So 2-3 of us put up our hands and said, okay. The ma'am said, now you just have 5 minutes because Bhagwan will come in 5 minutes into the Kalyan Mandap. And there was no pen, there was no paper. We had not carried anything because that was the next day we were supposed to leave. So I somehow was a little skeptical of going first. So I told ma'am, I said, can you ask someone else to speak first and I'll speak later. Okay, so what we decided, we wanted Bhagwan. Bhagwan entered the Kalyan Mandap and he told the boys, today my girls are speaking, no competition. And then he sat on this rotating chair, but he had turned his back to the boys, not towards us. Then he, you know, how the audience always feels that he just signals and people feel that, you know, out of the blue somebody has come to speak. He did that. So the first speaker, when she spoke, she became very emotional. So he made a remark. He said, parrot voice, parrot voice. So she came back and then he turned. I said, I didn't want to get up till he looked at me. Because, you know, for all reasons, he could say, why did you get up? So I sat there for a second and then he turned and he did this.
With the finger, just get up.
Just get up. Yes, indicating it. And now what happened was there was no pen and no paper. So I started speaking. I had prepared quite a lot. But then, you know, in that, it was the moment, it's an awesome moment. And so I forgot. And whatever I knew, you know, and I made a statement in front of Bhagwan saying that I didn't want to teach. But I've joined B.Ed. Now if I ever take up any profession, it'll only be that of a teacher. I said that and Swami kept nodding his head.
And that wasn't prepared? That wasn't premeditated?
No, nothing.
Just spontaneous.
Uh-huh. And at the end of it, because I forgot, I did the next best thing that I knew. I sang, you know, and I sang the verse from Tumi Ho Mata Pita Tumi Ho. In the middle, he stopped me before I sang the song. I must tell you this. And he said in Telugu, Noem Tinleda, you didn't eat anything, speak loudly. And people who hear me till now say, you can't talk softly at all. The voice is very loud.
That time it had become so mellow and soft.
So soft. He said, how will they hear you at the back? He told me. And then I raised my voice a bit and then I started singing. And I kept looking at him and singing. And he was just closing his eyes and swaying and finished. It was very abrupt end because I told you, I forgot in between. Finished? I said, yes, Swami. Good. And he clapped. So we came back. Then the next speaker, madam had asked about 3-4 of us to be prepared. So 4 girls spoke. Then I think he asked one of the boys to speak. We were very curious to know what was Bhagwan's reaction in the thrai session inside with the boys.
And
we
After our speeches.
Because we wanted to know the feedback. And so we had 2 sirs who were teaching us then. So they would attend these thrai sessions. So I believe Bhagwan had said inside the thrai that the 5 who spoke my panchapranas. And I think...
Five life forces.
And I think whoever was there, Mr. V.K. Narasimhan, General Mahadevan, they all remarked, how did my girl speak? Or the proud mother. So they said, Swami, they're very good teachers. They spoke well. They're very good mothers also, he said. You know, but so we kind of got our feedback when the sirs came. But it was a moment to treasure in life.
Oh, for sure. I can't imagine anything.
I mean, and there was something else. I must tell you this. You know, we had turns to sit according to our roll numbers every day. And this was the last day. So when we entered the interview room, 2 of us who were sitting in front are the ones with letter S. Mm-hmm. Okay, so both of us are sitting there.
Because roll number wise.
Yeah. And Bhagwan's footstool is there. And obviously, I mean, we would get the chance to do his Pada Seva. But then ma'am said, it's not fair. I mean, others also need a chance. So I did the most wisest thing I thought. I put my hands on the footstool and he kept drumming his feet on both the hands. I don't remember how long it went on. So the others got to touch Bhagwan's feet.
You had them under the feet. So you had Bhagwan's feet placed over your hand.
Yes, and he kept drumming with his feet.
Tapping.
Yes, foot tapping, and it was amazing.
I think I haven't heard of too many women students having such experiences of physical proximity. These are very precious.
And then in the middle of all that, I was telling you, he spoke about how to take care of the child and how to look after when your husband comes back from the office, how not to fight and how not to quarrel and everything he went on, like how a mother would advise her daughter. In the middle of all that, ma'am suddenly offered bhajia.
Oh, she got him a snack.
Yes, she got, and he loves this. So he started, "Main nahi khata, I don't eat." And he started distributing to all of us. Now, who would want to hold that when you are having Bhagwan and you're getting to touch his feet? So we kept it aside and we went to touch his feet. And he just told me, "Swami ka robe ganda hota hai. My robe will get dirty." For 1 minute, I just forgot he's God. And the hand went straight in front of his face. And I said, "My hand is clean. You're telling me my robe gets dirty." I just kept that aside. We didn't even, that was the last thing we were interested in. But, you know, it was a very reflex kind of an action. And the hand just went.
You want to show him it's not oily or anything.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not in any way
soiling your robe.
Yeah.
So, obviously, Whitefield was a beautiful experience that you cherished so deeply.
Yes.
But then once you graduated, you had already spent like 6 years at his lotus feet.
And yet that desire to continue was there. So in this Tarai session itself, when he was talking to us, I mustered the courage and I said, "Bhagwan, can I come back for
another degree of whatever it takes?"
But he very clearly said, "Go back home and MED karo. Do MED."
Okay, Masters in Education.
And he said, "Go back home and do it."
Okay.
So my message was very clear, that my mother has been alone for quite some time and it's right that I go back. And so with great, you can't disobey what Bhagwan has said. So with great reluctance, came back home. And but I didn't want to go and teach. I wanted to study further.
Although you said that in a speech without realizing who spoke to you.
No, I said, "I will teach, but later. Let me study. My mother always wanted me to become a doctor because she couldn't pursue, so she wanted. But then, unfortunately, I couldn't do it. So I thought, okay, let me do my post-grad, then maybe a PhD. But fate willed otherwise, and mom had a fall, and she fractured her feet. And so she used to travel by train, and so she had to switch on to a bus. They said, "You can't travel by train." Now, there she happens to meet a lady whose children are studying in the school and they don't have a maths teacher.
Hmm.
So she says, "What's your daughter doing?" "My daughter's a BSc B.Ed and she's at home. Please ask her, my children don't have a teacher." And I remember how much I grumbled when my mother dragged me to that place. And I didn't want to.
Quite a unique recruitment process. Your mom's bus buddy's children's school required a teacher.
Yes. And there's my mother, and as they called me inside for an interview, my mother's desperately praying, "Bhagwan, do something. I want her to work." And inside, can you believe me, the school doesn't question me about my credentials. They don't question me anything what I'm going to do. They ask me only about Bhagwan.
How come?
Why did I study in Bhagwan's college? What have I learned? Will I implement everything in the school?
In a positive way?
Yes.
They said,
"We want you. There were so many colleges here. Why did you go there?"
Mm-hmm.
But they asked, it was all centered around Bhagwan.
Swami, yeah.
And I said yes to it. And by the time I came out, when my mother saw a beaming smile on my face, she knew that Bhagwan had worked his magic.
Okay. And it's amazing, you've been at the same school for 24 years. That's a lot of commitment. And you've risen to be in a supervisory position. You're assisting the principal now.
But Bhagwan had told me to do my M.Ed.
M.Ed, yes.
And this was 88 I had joined. Within a year or two, the Mumbai University for the first time had introduced distance education M.Ed for teachers.
Okay.
And I came to know this only in 89-90. And I immediately enrolled myself because that would permit me to pursue it along with my teaching. And I still remember, I don't know if I should be saying this, but I could just say, it's so boring. Why do they? I could just share even that with Bhagwan, because I know he's there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's that kind of a bonding, because I probably knew him before my birth. So I just hope that I live up to his expectations.
I'm sure you are, and with his grace you will. It's been great listening to your experiences. Appreciate your time and coming to our studio.
Sairam.
Sairam Sai Sudha. Sairam, dear listeners, I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Ms. Sai Sudha Narayan of Mumbai. Sai Sudha Narayan is an alumna of Baba's University, Anandpur campus. As a matter of fact, you can enjoy listening to more than 135 such interviews with Bhagwan students by visiting our series, Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, on our website. So the shortcut to these interviews is www.radiosai.org/Sai Students. Sai Students being one single word. Just download and enjoy listening to a conversation of your choice at your leisure. As always, we look forward to your feedback to today's conversation with Sai Sudha Narayan. Please send in your emails to listener@radiosai.org. It's now time for me to bid you Sairam and offer morning glory at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Before I sign off, I would like to once again thank Swami for giving me this incredible honor of being your host on Morning Glory. This is a very grateful Karuna, along with audio engineer Yatharta, signing off and thanking you for your company and wishing you a very merry holy Christmas. Until next Thursday, please be well, keep seeking, and stay inspired. Sairam.